Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud On Out podcast. My name is Andreas.
And my name is Michael.
We are two brothers and freelancers. We focus 100% on AWS. We do technical coaching, for example, for teams that start their journey with AWS and do infrastructure bootstrapping, typically based on our infrastructure as code templates. And every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS in this podcast. And one of us prepares the topic, and then we go through it together. And Michael, what is the subject for this week's episode?
This week, we talk about one of our most successful blog posts in terms of readers every month. And this is CloudFormation versus Terraform. So we will have a look into the differences. And this blog post is actually quite old. So it's, I think, 2 or 3 years old. But I recently updated it. And I added the latest features of both services. So now the comparison is up to date. And I thought it's time to have a look at it again.
Yeah, very cool, Michael. So then let's start. So what do you have?
Yeah, so maybe first, before we really start with comparing the two tools, I want to give a short introduction into the topic. So we are talking about infrastructure as code. So the idea is that we have usually it's a text file. So in CloudFormation and Terraform, it's a text file. And within the text file, we kind of model the architecture of our infrastructure. So for example, we define we want to have an autoscaling group. It should be of this and that size. It should use this security group. This should be the load balancer. So things like this. So we describe how the infrastructure should look like. And what the tool does, the infrastructure as code tool, it reads the text file, and then it calculates the actions that are needed to reach the goal that we define as users. So we don't have to define step by step what needs to be done. Instead, we define how the thing should look like, and then the tool figures out how to achieve that. And the cool thing is that this doesn't only work with creation. It also works if you change the file. So if you deploy your infrastructure and then 1 minute later, 1 day later, 1 year later, you modify the file, you can apply the changes through the tool. And at the end, the tool will make sure that the state that you updated in the file is what is deployed to AWS. So that's kind of the concept. And CloudFormation is one implementation of this idea, and Terraform is one implementation of this idea. So, Andreas, I know that you used both tools. Can you maybe provide some insights into how long you used the tools and what are your experiences with the tools?
Yeah, Michael. So I started using CloudFormation a few months after I really started using AWS. And it was really some eye-opening that you can basically define the target state of your infrastructure as code. And you don't have to write any bash scripts, Python scripts, or anything like that, which gets quite complicated very quickly with all the dependencies. Instead, you have a very powerful tool. And I started with CloudFormation, I think it is probably 5 years ago now. And was always really happy about the features and the way it works, also the quality of the service. And so I was really team CloudFormation for a very long time. And Terraform came along and got very popular in the community as an open source tool. And HashiCorp is, I think, doing a really good job promoting it, also very good user experience and also a very helpful tool. But I was still thinking, I want to use the cloud vendor's tool, which is CloudFormation, so coming from AWS. Because I thought this is more reliable, more sustainable maybe from a business perspective, because the cloud provider supports it. And so this was why I was always using CloudFormation. And about a year ago, I started looking more and more into Terraform, mostly because some of our consulting clients were asking for it. They already started using Terraform, and so it doesn't make really sense to switch to CloudFormation, of course. And so I looked into Terraform. I liked it and used it for projects since then. And I think there's really one big pain point with CloudFormation those days. And this is CloudFormation misses support for a lot of new features and a lot of new services. And this is really driving me nuts when I want to implement a cloud architecture and I cannot use the latest features with CloudFormation. This is really, I can't understand why Amazon is not capable of updating the service. They try to, they promise to fix it, but they do not deliver on that for years now. And so that is why nowadays I'm really, maybe I'm more in favor of Terraform than of CloudFormation for many use cases.
Okay, Andrea, so this was like, you already started like going into the differences and the problems. So, okay, great. So I can confirm that like my story is very similar. So because of the like lacking support of many of the new features, especially in the container space, I was kind of forced to look into alternatives.
Maybe one thing we should mention as well is we have two open source projects with CloudFormation templates. So which means we share our CloudFormation infrastructure as code and on GitHub, and we have a collection of useful CloudFormation templates that you can use to bootstrap your infrastructure. So we are really deep into the CloudFormation world, and that's what I want to say. So we will have a link in the show notes to our CloudFormation templates and what we also call CloudFormation modules, which is our second project.
Let's start with the like comparison. There are many dimensions, many things to compare. So we just start with one more high level aspect, and then I think we go like deeper and deeper into the details. So the first thing that you have to understand, what's different is that AWS CloudFormation covers AWS services, while Terraform is not AWS only. So in Terraform, there are so-called providers. And for example, there's an AWS provider, but there's also a Google Cloud provider, an Azure provider. There's a GitHub provider, a GitLab provider, a Datadog provider. You can also create your own providers if you have some experience with Go programming. So that's one of the biggest differences, but there's one misconception. And this is, you cannot deploy, like if you have your if you've written your Terraform file, like you want to have an auto-scaling group, a load balancer, things like this, then this is tied to a provider. So for example, you have written this for the AWS provider, so you cannot, using the same file, and deploy to Azure. That's not possible. If you want to deploy to Azure, you have to use the Azure provider, and the Azure provider offers different resources than the AWS provider, so you really have to rewrite your file. It's not portable in terms of the resources, but of course it is portable in the concepts of the Terraform language. So you can use the same tool, you can use the same features of the tool, but still you cannot deploy the same file to AWS and Azure. So there was one announcement from AWS that kind of made me think that this could maybe change. So CloudFormation tries to like expand into the non-AWS area. They released something called Resource Providers in November 2019. That's basically a way for third parties to integrate into CloudFormation. But honestly, this feature is not really used very much. And I also don't think that's very user-friendly or like provider-friendly. So I don't see much traction of this feature. So I think it's still the case. CloudFormation is for AWS. Terraform is for many other things. Okay, Andreas, do you have one like difference for us?
Yeah, so I think one other important difference between CloudFormation and Terraform is CloudFormation is a service offered by AWS for free. But it's a proprietary software, so it's only available as an AWS service. You cannot use it locally, on premises, whatever. And on the other side, Terraform is an open source project. HashiCorp is the company behind Terraform. They do offer support plans, of course. And there's also a server component, a software as a service component for Terraform that you can use, but you don't have to. So it works without that as well. And so this is maybe the biggest differences. So from a license perspective, Terraform is open source. CloudFormation is free of charge, offered by AWS. And one other thing that is maybe important, though, I think when you use CloudFormation or Terraform for a critical production workload, it is probably a good thing to have a support plan. And with AWS, support for CloudFormation comes with the AWS support plan. With Terraform, you can get enterprise support for the tooling as well, which might be helpful, at least if you don't want to look into the Go source code to fix any problems if you really need to. So that is the difference from a license and support perspective.
Okay, so I have also another difference for you, Andreas. And when you first start using Terraform, like as a single person without a team, you can use it pretty easily. But you will soon figure out that when you Terraform apply, it will create a file that is called the state file, TF state. And within this state file, Terraform keeps track of all the resources it created. So this is kind of the state of Terraform. And by default, it is placed on your disk, on your where you run Terraform. So this is a problem if you work in a team, because if the teammates have different state files, things get, or basically you mess everything up. So that's not possible. So if you everyone needs to have access to the same state file, otherwise you run into serious problems. There are many ways to solve this. You could like try to figure out how to distribute this file in your team, but there's also a way to use S3 as the like central place to store the state file. But then you have the problem, okay, what happens if two team members are running Terraform Apply at the same time? So that's why you can use DynamoDB for locking. So this makes sure that only one of the one of two can run the Terraform Apply at the same time. What I basically want to say here is that there's quite some effort to make sure that this Terraform state file is in a good shape. And if this state file is corrupted for some reasons, you're really in big problems. So that's one of the disadvantages of Terraform, I would say. There's also one other way to manage it using the Terraform Cloud. So that's a like kind of software as a service offered by HashiCorp. So it stores the state for you. So that's also an option that you have. So then you are not storing your state on AWS, you are storing it somewhere else on Terraform's infrastructure. So that's an alternative that could be interesting. And it was not available when we first wrote a blog post. But the cool thing about CloudFormation is that you don't have to worry at all about all this stuff, because the state is stored by AWS inside CloudFormation, and AWS has to care about it. So that's not your job, basically. You don't have to back up the state and things like this. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, a like benefit of CloudFormation. The state management is really not an issue in CloudFormation.
Yeah, I think there's one aspect of managing that state file with Terraform, and this is something that you really have to be aware of, because the state file contains sensitive data. It could contain passwords, secrets, all kind of stuff. So that's something a lot of people probably oversee when they use Terraform. You have to really make sure that no one can access the state file on S3, because it really contains sensitive information. And with CloudFormation, you have the advantage that this is something the service keeps track of. It's abstracted away from us, and you don't have to think about that. Yeah, that's a big difference between those tools. Also, I think I haven't really seen Terraform Cloud in use in the real world that often. So I've seen it a few times, but most of Terraform customers are just using the open source version in from what I observe. So they have to deal with the state in S3 and DynamoDB typically. Okay, Michael, so let's talk about another big difference between CloudFormation and Terraform. So when you create infrastructure as code, you have a problem that you always have when writing code. You want to modularize your source code. You don't want to write the same stuff over and over again. So, for example, a typical application consists of a VPC, subnet, security groups, auto-scaling, load balancer, and so on. And it can make sense to create modules out of that you can reuse for different architectures easily. Because specifying all these resources in a single blueprint, a single template, will probably cause you headaches when maintaining it in the future. So you try to have small modules that you can stick together then as needed. And there's a big difference here with CloudFormation and Terraform, because I would say Terraform comes with really native support for modules. This is a first-class concept in Terraform. And there is even a Terraform registry where you can find open source modules. And some of them are quite popular. So there's really a bunch of very, very good AWS modules in the Terraform registry that you can use to build your infrastructure without really having to write down every single resource on your own. So this is really a great concept. CloudFormation, on the other hand, does not have first-class support for modules. So you can build modules, but yeah, it's really, you use workarounds basically to do so. So the biggest challenge with CloudFormation when building a module is how do you pass values from one module to another? And there are multiple options. So you can have, for example, nested stacks. There is an export-import feature for basically defining global variables and a lot of other stuff. But this is really not a first-class citizen in CloudFormation, and it makes building modules and using modules quite complicated compared to what we have with Terraform. So it is still possible. So, for example, we have an open-source module which is called CFN modules, where we really have very small and fine granular modules that you can bring together by using nested stacks and NPM to fetch all the the dependencies, and you can build your infrastructure as code based on that. But I would say it's much easier and smoother to use Terraform modules than what is possible with CloudFormation. And I think one big challenge is with CloudFormation, there's no real default on how to do it. So everyone solves that problem a little bit different. So yeah, there's no real big community where you can get modules that fit with each other.
Yeah, so I agree on this comparison, because I recently wrote some Terraform modules and I was really excited about how easy it was, like from the perspective of the module maintainer. It's basically you create a GitHub repository, then you go to the Terraform registry, you point it to the right repository, and then whenever you push a tag, a git tag, it automatically releases your version. So it's really nice, and there's a documentation generated. So there's some conventions that you have to comply with, but that's really easy. And then there's a public place where everyone can find the modules, which is, I think, a very big benefit. And also, like from a user perspective, you basically, like in your Terraform file, you just define that you want to use the module, and then when you run Terraform init, it downloads it. So it's really you realize that this is really a first-class citizen, and all the tooling knows how to handle it, and that's not really possible with CloudFormation. Yeah, so I think that's a big benefit of Terraform, and both for public modules, but you can also use this like internally in your organization, so you could have your own modules in your organization.
Yeah, we should definitely put some links to that into the show notes, so to link a few Terraform modules to have a look at, to point you again to our CloudFormation modules, just to compare and see the differences. Also, I think it's quite easy to use a Terraform module from a user perspective. So because you can just include it into your Terraform configuration file, and then it just downloads everything automatically and so on. So it's also really easy to use from that side of things. Okay, Michael, so any other big differences between CloudFormation and Terraform?
Yeah, so I also looked a little bit into the differences when it comes to a way to verify changes before they're actually applied. So as I mentioned at the beginning, you cannot only create your infrastructure, you can also update it. And if you update infrastructure, you might be interested in the changes and kind of want to review them before you apply them. And both tools support this in a way. So in CloudFormation, we have change sets. And Terraform, we have a plan. And also in both tools, we can make sure that we can actually really apply the change set or the plan, so that we make sure that we actually apply what we have reviewed. So that's supported by both tools, which is good. I still think that the Terraform plan is a little bit easier to read for humans. I mean, it's still tricky and you need some time to get used to it. But I started using Terraform maybe half in a year before, and I use CloudFormation for many, many, many years now. And I still, after some like weeks of getting used to how Terraform plan works, it was easier for me to read the output there than look at the change sets. In this regard, both tools have the same capabilities, but I think Terraform is a little bit easier to use. So that I don't think that's a big like benefit, but it's it's just a detail. But one thing that I want to mention here is that if something goes wrong while the update is running, this also applies to the creation at the beginning, but it's more important to the update. So if something goes wrong during the update, CloudFormation will roll back to the previous state. And for almost all cases, this is going to work. And Terraform does not roll back if something goes wrong. If something goes wrong, Terraform just stops. So that's kind of a problem. So you have to kind of figure out how to process forward from this kind of broken state. So that's a benefit for CloudFormation. I would say that it actually supports rollbacks. And there are some like edge cases where it's not going to work, but for almost all cases, it will work.
I can share a story on that. So I was deploying a change to an infrastructure with Terraform a few months ago, and the deployment failed over and over again, and then it just got stuck in that in the middle state of nothing basically was really working. And I tried for multiple times. I could not understand the error messages. It was really strange. Couldn't understand the behavior. Could not find anything related to that on Google. And after a while, I figured out, basically this is related to an AWS outage, because I think it was S3, which was suffering from a downtime in the region that I was deploying to. And this was causing all the troubles. So basically, Terraform was trying to make a change. The API call to the AWS API failed, and then I just got stuck in an inconsistent state, and I couldn't roll back. I couldn't do anything about that. And I think when I'm comparing that to CloudFormation, I think CloudFormation is more robust. It does better handle retries, failure condition, and then if nothing works, it tries at least to roll back to the previous state, which is most often no problem at all and successful. Yeah, I think that's really a big plus for CloudFormation here.
Yeah. So when we talk about rollback, so we could also like add another like kind of feature in the same like space, and this is like safeguards. So with CloudFormation and Terraform, you can prevent a resource, or you can basically configure a resource in a way that it is not deleted if you Terraform destroy or CloudFormation delete stack. So the resource stays, it's not touched. So for example, this could be your database. And that's a very basic feature, and CloudFormation adds some more capabilities on top of that. So for example, for databases, CloudFormation can also create a snapshot before it deletes the resource, so then you have a backup. And so in this regard, I think CloudFormation also has a little bit more features to make sure that if something goes wrong and a resource is recreated, that you likely have not expected and you have not really gone through the change set, then CloudFormation can help you a little bit better. But this is still something that you have to configure. I think for databases, it's the default that they create a snapshot before they delete the resource. But for other resources, it's something that you have to configure, but at least you have the features and the capabilities of the tool to support it. What else do you think is different between the two tools?
Yeah, I think a very important difference is a feature that I call wait conditions. So when you create infrastructure as code, you have basically you do two different things. You do API calls, AWS API calls to set up all the resources. For example, create an auto-scaling group, spin up virtual machines, stuff like that, create a database, whatever, create an S3 bucket, all that. And then it's also, but what to get your system running, you also need oftentimes to provision, configure, and bootstrap your virtual machines or your containers, what have you. And the thing is, for that, it is sometimes very helpful to be able to wait not only until the resource has been created, but to wait until, I don't know, a service is ready, a virtual machine is booted completely, stuff like that. And CloudFormation comes with wait conditions. So we can define, this is an EC2 instance, and please wait with all the dependent resources until a process running on that virtual machine has signaled this instance has been created completely. So the services are running, for example, on the machine, or I don't know, if we have restored everything from a backup, stuff like that. So you can basically send signals to those wait conditions via HTTPS, and the CloudFormation tool, the infrastructure as code tool, can wait for those signals to happen. And this is a feature that is not supported by Terraform at all. That's probably because there is no backend that, that, for example, a virtual machine could talk to, because you're just running Terraform from your local machine or from your deployment pipeline. So that is something that is not possible with Terraform, but it's something that is oftentimes very helpful also, especially if you do distributed systems where different parts have to wait for each other. So this is a helpful feature. Of course, you can solve it with other tools, but it's kind of helpful to have that in your infrastructure as code tool as well.
Okay, so I think the next difference that I have on my list is kind of going into a similar direction, or it kind of depends on what you introduced. And this feature is called rolling update, and this applies to auto-scaling groups. So with CloudFormation, if the launch configuration is replaced, so if you make a change to the launch configuration, it is replaced because it cannot be changed, you have to create a new one, and then the auto-scaling group is updated and references the new launch configuration. And if this happens, you can define a so-called update policy for the auto-scaling group. And in the update policy, you can define that a rolling update should be initiated by CloudFormation. This means if there are four instances running in the auto-scaling group, it will replace, for example, one instance at a time with the new AMI. You can configure all kinds of things, so how many instances are replaced at the same time, if they are first added or first removed. So there's a lot of configuration possible. And this helps you to kind of deploy AMIs, like new AMIs, into your infrastructure without risk of losing, or basically without the risk of a downtime if something goes wrong. Because you do it in a like one-by-one fashion. And as you know, or as we already mentioned, if something goes wrong, CloudFormation can roll back. So that's kind of the big advantage here. With Terraform, that's not so easy to implement. Basically, the only way to do it is to deploy in a blue-green fashion. So you spin up a new auto-scaling group with the new AMI, and then the old one is removed. So that's kind of the way that it works in Terraform. So I think the capabilities in CloudFormation are a little bit more evolved compared to what you get with Terraform. But It's also fair to say that you could also use other tools to do this. So maybe you want to use CodeDeploy for deploying the changes. So then you don't need CloudFormation at all in this process. But yeah, still CloudFormation has some like better support, but it only is important if you deploy to EC2 instances in auto-scanning groups.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Michael. So the next thing I want to talk about is how do CloudFormation and Terraform handle existing resources? Because sometimes you don't want to start with your infrastructure as code from scratch. You might have created a database manually already, or I don't know, you might want to, I don't know, restructure your CloudFormation templates, your Terraform code, and you just need to import existing resources in a way. And Terraform supports doing so. So you can import existing resources into Terraform, into your state file, basically, and then you can add it to your code as well. And then it looks for Terraform as this has always been part of your Terraform code. CloudFormation added support for importing resources as well, most likely because this was a difference between Terraform and CloudFormation and it was missing on their checklist. But they have implemented it, I would say, poorly. Only a very small number of resource types are supported. So basically, you cannot really say that this feature is is existent because, yeah, it supports a bunch of resources, but it's really not at all implemented completely. So that's how you import resources. Terraform has another interesting concept because sometimes you maybe don't really need to import a resource. You might just need some properties of that resource in your code or reference that. And Terraform has the concept of data providers. So this allows you to query attributes from existing resources, which can be helpful as well. And maybe then you don't need to import the whole resource at all into your Terraform code. So that's an interesting concept as well, which is not existent with a CloudFormation at all.
Okay, so the next point that I have on my list is, and this was also kind of mentioned by you already, Andreas, is about secrets. So in CloudFormation, we have many ways to work with secrets. And secrets are like integrated from AWS Secrets Manager or from the parameter store that is part of Systems Manager. And the cool thing in CloudFormation is that there's a way to embed secrets without ever storing them in CloudFormation. So this is called, I think it's called dynamic reference in CloudFormation. So there was a way to do this with parameters before. If you inject a secret via parameter, then I'm not quite sure if that's true, that is not stored. But if it's a dynamic reference, then the value is never stored in CloudFormation. And it's also never outputted at any like time in CloudFormation. So it's not possible to leak the secret through CloudFormation. The kind of bad news here is that the dynamic references for parameter store are not working with any property. It's just a small list of properties. If they come from Secrets Manager, then you can use them everywhere. So, I mean, there are always these small like problems, but if your secrets are in Secrets Manager, then you're in a pretty good shape or in a pretty good position. So in Terraform, it's a little bit different. You can read secrets from remote backends or from environment files, but the big change or the big difference here is that at any or whatever you do, wherever the secrets are stored, they will be placed in plain text into the Terraform state file. So this was mentioned by you already, Andreas, and then basically the whole Terraform state file becomes a secret. And I think that's kind of unmanageable. So I don't know how to really deal with secrets in Terraform. I think it's simply not possible. Like at the same level with CloudFormation, where you never expose the secrets. So that's a big difference, I think, where CloudFormation really shines.
Okay, so yeah, we're diving into more and more details now. But I think it's still interesting if you compare those tools. The next section is loops and conditions. So both CloudFormation and Terraform are descriptive languages. So in theory, there is no such thing as a while loop or an if statement. But both CloudFormation and Terraform have workarounds for that. CloudFormation comes with first-class support to enable or disable resources if a certain condition is met. However, there is no really way to loop in CloudFormation over an array. On the other side, Terraform comes with support for creating multiple resources by just defining one resource and then having kind of a loop of that resource. And you can also use the same concept to enable or disable a resource if a condition is met. But conditions, I would say, are not first-class citizen. It's kind of a workaround or using the same concept. So I would say conditions are a little bit easier to use with CloudFormation. But Terraform, on the other hand, supports loops, which is only available in Terraform and which is oftentimes quite helpful, stuff like creating subnets where you have a lot of resources that are most almost the same, but you have to create, I don't know, 3 or 5 of them every time. So this is a little bit easier to do with Terraform.
Yeah, so maybe to make this a little bit clearer, basically the condition in Terraform is a loop that starts and ends at 0. So it's like a loop that doesn't really loop. What I was running into recently is that we already mentioned that there's first class support for modules in Terraform, but the problem is that the loop feature is not available in modules. So you cannot enable and disable a module because you don't have loops. And so Terraform is working, or the HashiCorp is working on this problem, but this was kind of frustrating.
Yeah, the module itself has basically to support that. Yeah. You can, but not all of them do.
Yeah. Okay. So the next difference, and that's, I think it's a convenience feature that maybe not everyone is aware of that it actually exists, is CloudFormation can tag all the resources in a stack with a set of tags out of the box. So when you create a stack, or you can basically define the tags that are applied to all resources. So this makes it easier, so you don't have to remember adding the tags to all the resources in your template. You can just configure them when the stack is created. So that's very convenient, and that's not possible with Terraform. So I think it's easier to ensure consistent tagging in CloudFormation because of that feature. But we also have to say that it's not perfect, the feature, so it doesn't work for all the resources. Okay, Andreas, I think I'm more or less done with my comparison. Do you have any other thing or item on your list?
Yeah, maybe one small thing that I would like to add is linting and auto-completion is available for both tools, CloudFormation and Terraform. And I really highly recommend to use CF and lint or TF lint to make sure you catch problems in your infrastructure as code before you deploy them, which makes the cycle you go through much faster, and you can really much faster create those infrastructure as code files. So I think tools are available for both, and definitely check them out and use them when using CloudFormation or Terraform.
Okay, Andreas. So I think it's time for a summary, and I'm looking forward for your summary as well, because maybe our summaries are different. So my summary is that CloudFormation and Terraform are both mature and powerful tools. I would say that CloudFormation has is a little bit more mature. It has more features. But the big problem is that CloudFormation kind of lacks coverage for many services or many features of services. And that's much better with Terraform. So that's why I find it really hard to kind of say that, okay, we have a clear winner here, because feature-wise, CloudFormation is, I think, the winner. But the problem is that service coverage-wise, CloudFormation is not the winner. And at the end, what can you do with all these great features if you cannot deploy EFS for Fargate? So I'd say that if you're using with technologies that are or if you want to use the newest AWS technologies, my recommendation is to go with Terraform. because you will be very frustrated with CloudFormation. So is this also kind of your advice?
Yes, I think so. So right now, over the last 2 years, the lack of support for features and services, new features and new services for CloudFormation is really frustrating me. And that means I would favor Terraform over CloudFormation at the moment. I think it's not only for really the hottest features and services of AWS. It's sometimes really helpful features also for legacy lift and shift applications. So I don't know, there's a new feature for RDS that you want to use and then you cannot do because CloudFormation does not support it. Of course, it's worth when you go into the container space and stuff like that, then it really gets worse with CloudFormation coverage. But I think it's also for, I would say, the more boring services, you're still missing important features there. And it's not only the latest features. So some of the features that are missing in CloudFormation are more than a year old. So you cannot really say it's the latest feature. And so I really don't understand that. So Terraform is typically really fast with implementing new services and features in the provider. So typically maybe a week or something. And with CloudFormation, some features are missing for years now. And AWS started a GitHub project where they list all the missing, or basically where we as a customer have to provide them a list of all the things that are missing. But I can't see really good progress there. So for whatever reason, this big company is not capable of it, or probably they just don't want to, because that's basically the only explanation for that. They don't care of implementing those missing features. So that's a bummer. And I think personally, I prefer CloudFormation because of all of the features and the state management and rollbacks and everything. But the missing support for features and services is definitely changing that right now. And of course, we are really kind of a little bit locked down into the CloudFormation ecosystem because we have so many CloudFormation templates and modules. But it's also simple to convert them into Terraform. So I think that's probably something we will start in the future as well to be able to work around that problem. And there's one last thing I want to mention. So one thing that I'm a little bit frightened about is that that HashiCorp is sold to someone, I don't know, Microsoft, whoever, and that we will then have problems with AWS support in the future as well. So I'm not, that's my only fear with using Terraform is how sustainable is the whole ecosystem and the company HashiCorp that is behind Terraform. That's my only concern about Terraform those days. So
one thing to add maybe is that the AWS provider, like Terraform's AWS provider, is not maintained by Amazon. So that's kind of different with other cloud providers. And so that's also interesting just to know that if you're using it. So if you use it, you basically rely on. And that's really like more or less open source work. So that's some, I mean, HashiCorp is doing lots of things, but it's also like really open source world work where just people contribute to the project. So it doesn't has or it doesn't have like or doesn't look like it has official support from AWS in terms of like implementing the latest resources. Okay, Andreas. So I think we are mostly done. So there's one thing I like to mention before we end. So if you are or basically it doesn't really matter which tool you use. So if you are familiar with CloudFormation, it doesn't take like a lot of time to get familiar with Terraform, because you will very soon realize that the resources are actually very, very similar. So the way you have to like wire up a load balancer is the same as you do it in CloudFormation. The resources, the properties might be a little bit different, but the mechanics are defined by the AWS API. So that's the same for both tools. So I think it's very easy to switch if you're familiar with one of the tools and with the cloud provider itself. So if you're interested, like our listeners, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about AWS and CloudFormation in specific, then I can recommend our book, Amazon Web Services in Action. It's available in the second edition, so it was updated already. And it gives you an introduction into AWS, but it really goes very deep. So it's, I think, 17 chapters long. And the cool thing about the book is that it really starts using CloudFormation very early on. So I think the first chapters are with the UI, and after chapter 3 or 4, we really go into CloudFormation, and everything you do from chapter 4 on is CloudFormation only. So that's really, I think, a good way to learn how the services work, but also how you can configure them with CloudFormation. So if that's something that you're interested in, check out the show notes, and I will add a link there, and you have some a lengthy book to read through and learn all kinds of things about AWS. Okay, Andreas. So I think it's time to end. So do we have some, maybe want to give some information about how our listeners can give us feedback and things like this?
Yes, sure. So yeah, thanks for listening, and thanks for coming up with the topic for this week's episode, Michael. To your listeners, we ask you to please share the Cloud on Out podcast with one person that could be interested. This helps us very much. Please also send us your feedback. You can do so by sending us a private message. You will find links to Twitter, LinkedIn, and our email address in the show notes. Which is also very helpful for us, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. So for example, with Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, leave us a rating there. That helps us very much. So thank you very much for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks. Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.